By downloading or listening to this podcast, you are agreeing to Moody's legal terms and conditions found at moodys.com/disclaimer, including that the information provided is not investment or financial advice, and that Moody's will not be liable for losses arising from your use of the information.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Emerging Markets Decoded. I'm Shireen Mohammadi, and today I'm joined by a very special guest, Mark Zandi, Chief Economist at Moody's Analytics. Before we get started, I should note that Moody's Analytics and Moody's Investor Service are different divisions of Moody's Corporation, and that the views expressed by Mark don't represent those of Moody's Investor Service. So with that, welcome, Mark.
Good to be with you. Thanks for the opportunity.
Now, today we're going to focus on the Fed's decision to raise rates by another 25 basis points and explore what this means for emerging markets. It's fair to say that the last few weeks have been particularly volatile as stresses in the U.S. banking system and the announced takeover of Credit Suisse by UBS have clouded the picture around monetary policy, not just in the U.S., but across developed markets. We know that inflation remains stubbornly high pretty much across the globe, and despite the general feeling that the turning point is near, the timing for this keeps getting pushed back. Across emerging markets, the picture is more one of stabilization rather than a sharp pivot. Around half of the largest EMs have paused rate hikes, but we're still seeing some pretty large increases in places like Nigeria, Colombia, Mexico, and the Philippines. And inflation is still surprising to the upside in a few places, like Poland and recently South Africa. So, as ever, Mark, a lot to talk about. So let's get right into it. First, what does today's Fed announcement mean in terms of the future trajectory for the Fed funds rate?
Higher. Fed increased rates a quarter point today, bringing the effective federal funds rate target between 4.75% and 5%. They're signaling at least another rate hike. And at that point, I think they're very unsure where things are headed. Jay Powell, the chair of the Fed, articulated some concern about the banking crisis that's been unfolding in the U.S. here for the last 10 days and what that might mean for credit availability, lending, and ultimately economic growth. So one more rate hike seems to be pretty likely. And then after that, I think it's very uncertain. My own view, and I think this would be consistent with the view of investors generally, is that'll probably be the end of it for a while. That would be the so-called terminal rate, the highest the rate we'll get in this rate cycle. So good news in the sense that we're getting close to the end of this rate hike cycle.
And how consistent was the decision with the messages coming out from the recent data points, like inflation, labor force
participation? It felt a little incongruous to me in the context of the banking crisis. I mean, here we were a week ago, bank runs, failing institutions, major bank in Europe, investment bank getting into real trouble, stock prices falling. And of course, the government, U.S. government stepped in aggressively, insured depositors of failed institutions, big and small. The Fed set up a credit facility to try to provide liquidity to the banking system to help out and take some of the pressure off. And then a week later, they raise rates, which would put pressure on the banking system. And confidence is, you know, obviously pretty fragile. People are still very nervous. So to me, that just didn't square so well. I if I were on that committee that made the decision around rate policy, I would have argued strongly that we should pause, that the Fed should pause in its rate increases and take a look around, see what kind of damage has occurred to the system, stabilize the system. And then once it's clear, the coast is clear and the system's on solid financial ground, then pivot to back to addressing the high inflation that we're suffering with.
And since you mentioned these liquidity facilities, how are you thinking about these recent measures that the Fed and other central banks announced in light of the recent banking developments? Are these measures offsetting the quantitative tightening that was underway, in your view?
Yeah, it goes to the incongruity. I mean, it's kind of sort of weird, right? I mean, you're QTing, you're letting treasuries and mortgage securities to mature and prepay, run off the Fed's balance sheet. And at the same time, you're basically taking treasuries and mortgage securities as collateral that the banks can use to borrow to try to meet the depositors' needs. So it's kind of working at cross purposes. So it just feels weird. I mean, a central banker might argue, look, I've got two different sets of tools and I'm trying to address two different sets of problems. The QT is addressing the high inflation, the credit facility is addressing the banking situation. But that, I'm having a hard time getting my mind around that. That feels really odd to me.
And how has today's decision, in combination with these banking stresses, changed your view on, one, the probability of a recession, two, the timing of a possible recession, and three, severity of said recession?
Yeah, I'm uncomfortable, more uncomfortable now. I had been thinking that the U.S. economy can make its way through without a full-blown outright recession. Not to be Pollyannish, it's going to be uncomfortable in the times that feel like we're going to recession. But I thought baseline, kind of in the middle of the distribution of possible outcomes forecast, was we're going to make our way through. Got to be a little bit lucky, and we need some reasonably good policymaking. The banking crisis doesn't qualify as good luck, and what the Fed did today in raising rates doesn't feel like good policymaking to me. So that adds up to a much higher probability that, you know, this economy is going to go into recession at some point over the next 12, 18 months. I don't know that I'm going to change my baseline forecast of no recession yet. I'm not nearly as confident in that forecast as I was just a couple of weeks ago.
And shifting now to emerging markets, do you think EM central banks will generally stay in lockstep with the Fed?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the key is stability in the foreign exchange markets. There, you know, there's been some volatility there, but in the grand scheme of things, pretty minor, you know, compared to at least other periods where you get into a risk-off environment and EM currencies are under extreme pressure and putting a lot of pressure on central banks to raise interest rates to, you know, maintain the currency and avoid runaway inflation. See that to a significant degree here. EM central banks have done a pretty good job kind of managing things and keeping up with the Fed, and it's worked out pretty well. I mean, I'm painting with a broad brush, and depends on which EM your economy you're talking about. But in general, I think the EM economies have kind of hung in there reasonably gracefully. And most have done a good job of insulating themselves from the risks posed by big swings in their currency vis-a-vis the dollar. They don't have as much exposure to dollar-denominated debt as they have historically. And I think that puts them in a better spot. Current account deficits, well, you look at that because that's key to the amount of capital that the EM economies need to come in to meet their current account deficits if they have them. Generally, in pretty good shape. There's some exceptions. I think mostly Latin American economies in particular have a larger current account and need more capital. But broadly speaking, that looks pretty good to me. So I'd say in general, the EM economies are navigating things well. And I think they're doing a pretty good job of managing monetary policy in the context of what the Fed is doing. And if the Fed is, in fact, close to ending its rate hike cycle here, that should help out. So there isn't much more work that these central banks need to do to keep up. And I think that would be a positive development. So, I, you know, all in all, I think feel pretty good about things. Obviously, again, I'm painting with a broad brush, and there are exceptions, some pretty notable exceptions out there, you know, where economies have really struggled. But in general, I think the universe has held up pretty well.
You alluded a little bit to this already, but what are your latest views on the U.S. dollar generally? And what's the impact for EM financing conditions?
Yeah, it feels like the dollar's peaked. It obviously took off during the pandemic, and probably, I'm thinking from speaking from memory, but on a broad trade weighted basis, probably peaked back end of last year in early, late 2022, when it looked like you know, we need a much higher, a much more significant rate increases to get inflation back in to target the Fed's target. But dollar has come off the high, and now with the recent, the today's Fed decision where they pretty much said we're getting close to the end of the hiking cycle, dollar weakened a little bit more. So it feels like the dollar is past its peak and will, I expect, further kind of moderation in the value of the dollar on a broad trade weighted basis here going forward as the rest of the world kind of catches up to the U.S. and Fed policy.
And finally, where are the surprises going to come from?
Well, I wish we had this 2 weeks ago and I told you it was going to be, you know, that did surprise me. Probably shouldn't have. I mean, we have a lot of clients that are banks, and they were, you know, obviously were complaining. Complaining's not the right word, but we're hand-wringing over the deposit outflow. And that's not unusual in this kind of environment with rising interest rates. Depositors have other options where they can get higher returns. And so it's not, consumers have been drawing down their deposits because of the high inflation. They need that cash to kind of help support their purchasing power. So not too surprising, but I have been surprised at the kind of the stress that has put the system under more broadly. So I wish I had gotten that. But I'd say there are other fissures out there. I don't think there are fault lines in the financial system that think worth keeping a wary eye on. You know, I worry about, and this is in no order, particular order of importance, but the independent mortgage banks in the residential mortgage space, they are key to mortgage lending, single family residential mortgage lending. you know, I am nervous about kind of the seeming choppiness in the treasury market. Can kind of see that in recent days and in the recent turmoil. The market just doesn't feel like it's as liquid as it needs to or should be. And you can see big movements in yields, and that makes me a little bit nervous. I'm not sure, you know, what's, you know, where that goes. You know, some concern about the leveraged loan market that's grown very rapidly over the last decade. And a lot of those loans are, you know, very transparent. They're rated. They go into CLOs. We know a lot about them. I'm not too worried about those. It's those, though, loans that are or don't go into CLOs, aren't rated, kind of go out there into the shadow system. And if you get a one that blows up or two, then you might get investors all running for the door because there's no transparency around that market. And they don't know who's good and who's bad, you know, that kind of thing. Kind of a run on the leveraged loan market. I worry somewhat about the increase in default and delinquency in the consumer loan market. You know, bank card delinquencies are rising quickly, going back to inflation and its impact on purchasing power. Low-income households are borrowing a lot of money to try to supplement their income to maintain their purchasing power, and that's ending up in some delinquency default. Unsecured personal loans would be in there as well. So, you know, there's I call these fissures, fault lines, but I'll end by saying usually the thing that does you in is the thing you just didn't see, like this bank, you know, this asset liability mismatch and the bank crisis that followed, and just missed it. And that's generally what is the thing that does you in, the thing that you can't see.
Well, Mark, thank you for the very insightful discussion today. And thank you to our listeners. Join us next time for another episode. And in the meantime, if you have any comments or topic suggestions for future episodes, please feel free to email us at empodcast@moodys.com.
Thanks for listening to this Moody's Talks podcast. To find out more about the topics discussed, please follow the links in the show notes. You can check out other Moody's Talks podcasts by visiting moodys.com/podcasts.